You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Dean Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show.
Welcome, welcome. How are you guys? As you guys know, Bing is for doing, and we're here doing another AfterBuzz TV After Show,
yes,
for Mad Men.
We are.
It's been some time.
Long break for them.
That's right. Long break for them. And, you know, when we first started AfterBuzz TV and we did Mad Men, we were doing it without any video. And so
that's how long ago it was.
That's right. And so for those of you guys watching, my name is Phil Svitek. I'm engineering now in Studio B. Not only do we have video,
yeah,
we have two studio with video. And by the way, yeah, this is a brand new development for right here at AfterBuzz TV. And my fellow co-host is... Oops, it's tough to engineer and...
Here, I'll take over. I'm John Comerford. Thanks for joining us. Does that help you?
That definitely helps me. So we're here doing a Mad Men Season 5, Episode 1, titled A Little Kiss. You know, and before we continue, let's get a few managerial things out of the way. Right, John, is that okay with you?
I'm game.
It's been a little while, and so for those of you watching or listening, here's how it works. We're going to do the show. We're doing it on Tuesday today, but we're probably going to switch over to Sundays. And
right,
so that means you can watch us live on Sundays on the website. You just go to AfterBuzzTV.com and watch there. We have the schedule there, so that's how you'll know the time. And follow us on Twitter, and you know, we'll post updates as well. And you know, if you can't catch us live, you know, you can watch the video the next day, or definitely go on iTunes and check us out there. All the links are through AfterBuzzTV.com. It's like one big portal that gets you to where you need to. And, you know, here's how it works. It's completely free to you guys. You know, we love talking about Mad Men. Last season, we only did the last four episodes because that's when we kind of started and we did this. And, you know, we have fun doing it. It's free to you guys. We're developing an app that's also going to be free, so you guys get all of our content easier. We've got exciting new things coming up. I can't reveal a lot of I was telling John.
Yeah.
We're... going to be doing something really, really fun for you guys. So in return, please rate and comment us on iTunes. That's all we ask for in return. It takes 15 seconds.
And tell a friend.
That's right.
Let them know.
Let them know.
Bring them in.
And then the last thing is, for those of you who don't know, Maria Menounos started this whole venture, you know, podcasting and after shows. And right now, if you live in a cave, she's on ABC's Dancing with the Stars.
Doing quite well.
Doing quite well. What did she get last night, John?
A 9, an 8, and an 8. She was in fourth place last night.
I'm told that's very good.
It's very good. For the second show of the season, that's very good.
That's right. And so, in return, what you guys can do for us is also vote for Maria.
Yeah.
Because the longer Maria stays in the competition.
Yeah, the more we can keep our doors open. We can keep the lights on. We can keep podcasting.
That's right. So that about wraps up all the things I had to say. So let's get right into this episode. John, let's see. You talk about Y&R. Because at
Y&R,
first,
I'm
so used to things around here. So I was like, Young and the Restless.
Yeah, that's right. We do podcasts, Young and the Rest. No, not that. Yeah, another rival ad agency to Sterling Cooper.
Have you known about them?
No, actually. And you know, let me have full disclosure here. This is the first full episode I've ever watched of Mad Men. It's just one of those things where I knew about it, heard about it, all that kind of stuff, and I said, oh, you know, I should probably check that out. So when the opportunity came, I said, yeah, bring me in. I'd love to watch it. So this is the first time I've seen it, so I didn't really know. In fact, I don't know any of the history, which is kind of interesting walking into it.
Well, here's what I will say about John, though, to the preface why he's actually on the show.
Right.
Is he's a filmmaker, screenwriter, producer, script doctor. He also knows cinematography very well, so he has a huge, huge background in this world. And in fact, he was in tonight's episode.
I was in tonight's episode.
At the train scene.
Right. As merely background, of course. And, you know, at the time we shot it, I had no idea when it was going to air, that it would be the premiere at all. They don't tell you that kind of thing. So I was surprised as everybody else. In fact, I didn't even watch tonight's episode until afterwards. I started getting emails from and texts from people saying, "Hey, did I just see you on Mad Men?" So it was quite a surprise to me as well.
Yes, and also, just in terms of myself, I'm a fan of the show. I've seen all four seasons, and we're going to get more people here. I know Kevin Undergaro,
loves the show,
co-creator of AfterBuzz TV, loves the show, and then Catherine Tulich, they just couldn't be here tonight. To be joining us. In terms of the Y&R, though, like the fans, I mean, we haven't been here for basically 2 years,
right,
with Mad Men, almost, yeah, 2 years, not full 2 years, but... Yeah. I like how that was the first scene that got us back into it,
yeah, exactly,
you know, with the civil rights movement,
yeah,
and them,
yeah,
and comedy too, you know, which
and comedy, and also showing that they just didn't care. They don't care about this, you know. It's Madison Avenue. They're not really touched by the civil rights movement yet, because, you know, so they're just dropping water bombs on protesters.
Yeah, and I like
boys will be boys.
Boys will be boys. I always love the fact how they can get they can place us in history without,
right,
really, you know, doing too much. You know, later on, not to get too much into it, but, you know, with the I don't know if it's a Marine, basically a soldier going,
right,
off to the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
They were making fun of him, like, oh, this is what this guy's fighting for, to, hey, be back in a body bag.
Exactly.
So they, you know, obviously, the height of the war hasn't gotten to a bad place yet. You know, it's still the early 60s.
It's theoretical at the moment. It's not in their living rooms yet. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
Where it would come.
Yeah. By the way, John, what do you remember of the 60s?
Not very much. I was, you know, just a kid. So this era I don't really have any kind of affinity for, because it was before me.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, I'm aware of it through history and everything like that, but I don't really have any personal connection to it.
Fair enough. In terms of the Y&R thing, I like how, you know, you didn't really need a thread episode, but,
yeah, exactly,
but this was the thread for the,
right,
entire episode.
Yeah, it was the runner. It was the gag.
Yeah.
The runner gag. And what I liked about it is, again, since I don't know the history, I just like that here these ad agencies are basically their frat brothers, or not frat brothers, but rivals, just, you know, rubbing each other's nose in it and playing practical jokes on each other. And I just thought that's who these guys are.
I certainly did love that aspect to it, though, but it also, you know, again, did it need to be part of the episode? No.
No.
But I like the fact that it is, because, you know, unlike some things, other TV shows, it did serve a purpose, in the sense that obviously it got Joan,
right,
to see it,
right,
and that propelled her storyline. It kind of, I don't know if I would say discredited Don to a degree for having run that ad or whatever it,
yeah,
may be, but it did put them at odds, you know.
A little bit. Well, the other thing I thought was really interesting about it, because I'd seen an interview on Charlie Rose with a lot of the cast and Mark the creator, and they were talking about how they didn't have a lot of African Americans on the show just yet, and because at the time, and he, on his research on Madison Avenue, there weren't that many at,
yeah,
the time, because we hadn't really gotten that far in our involvement as a country. So I thought that also it was also to show that too. I mean, the end scene where, you know, they're taking applications, it was unheard of. That nobody had African Americans in their ad agencies.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, what was Lane going to do? He was just going to throw them out like that? That's what you said. But are they going to do something more with it, or was that just basically no?
It seems like they're going to save face. They'll probably bring a few in. You know, if. You know, they could easily just take the applications and, you know, never call anybody in and just say that none of them met our qualifications. They could easily do that. But I'm wondering, because they, on this interview, they had talked about trying to find ways to bring that period and that issue up in the series as it was happening in history as well.
Well, they certainly did. And to be honest with you, I really always loved Roger for his boldness and bluntness,
yeah,
of, like, let's just tell him, I think he said basically F off. Or just keep interviewing them until they all go away.
Yeah, they'll just go away.
Which is a smarter idea.
Yeah. So no one will pin anything on them. Yeah.
Yeah. Not a nice idea.
No,
but
it's a very Roger Sterling idea. Yeah.
Well, let's take a moment back before we talk about Roger, and let's talk about Lane Price.
Right. Jeez. Oh my God.
Why do you cringe?
Well, he gets the wallet and the whole Dolores thing. It just felt pathetic. And for me, I was just going, why? And he calls her, and then that was just a weird conversation. It was a little skeevy, a little, I don't know. It was just like, what is he? And she was odd too on the phone. You know, I can't really call myself his wife. And it was just like, what is going on? And then he seems to have all these hopes and desires about one phone call about this girl he doesn't know. It's just, that's how pathetic. It just seemed pathetic to me. His life was that desperate.
Well, you know, I think he's just, in most things, he just knows he's in over his head. And he deserves a certain amount of respect from the agency and from his family life. Uh-huh. And he's never really gotten it.
Right.
Certainly not from his father last season.
Sure.
You know, obviously the wife questioning him today. And then you actually brought up a good thing that you thought that he sucked with the books.
Yeah, I didn't know. I don't know the history of the show, but it seemed like they were playing it off that, you know, he even said, I'm going to be found out. He said he was talking to Joan, and he said, you know, you better get back here soon or they're going to realize I'm such a sham. And I gathered from what was going on that Joan is really the one that's running the books. I mean, she's the one that's able to make all, you know, behind the scenes, she's making things work.
Yeah. And before he even said that, she's the one who picks up on it. So I'm basically here giving you free advice.
Exactly.
So.
And so they did just enough to let me know that. And I is that accurate? Is she the one that's running the show back there?
I mean, she's always been that type of person.
Right.
You know, for a secretary, she's always had that so much responsibility, which is why when she does come back, you know, I think it's Clara who says to her,
making me do twice the work and all
that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think what that comment meant was she raised the bar so high, now we all have to do it and for the same amount of money.
Exactly. And not only that, but they also said that they split up her job responsibilities between two women or whatever, and one of them
I think it was three.
Maybe been three, but one of them is saying she's having to do a lot more work. So even though Joan's work is spread out amongst three, they're all having to do a lot more work.
Yeah. So, and yet, you know, that's the perspective that those guys take. You know, the secretary's the ones with her job.
Yeah.
And yet, in terms of the people that quote matter or whatever.
Yeah.
They're just passing around the baby.
Yeah, I thought that was the best thing. Man. You know, Joan didn't even really, you know, she's here, and she's off because she's, you know, she's so worried about her job and all this other stuff. And the baby, by the time it's like, no one seems to care where the baby is. Joan's off, like, right, hey, thanks. Everybody's just passing the baby off. Nobody seems to care. I thought that was hysterical. And then it ends up with the receptionist of all people. The woman, you know, she's barely awake.
Exactly. And again, just goes to show how much, you know, that. Because Joan, very much, you know, if you really, not that she ever took care of babies as a secretary, but like it wouldn't be unheard of if she. Well, actually, that's not true. She did take care of Sally when Sally visited the office.
Okay,
you know, so again, just.
But it made me wonder because I'm going, you know, the whole thing with Joan and her mother and all that stuff and all that resentment and all that stuff, and I'm wondering because it's Roger's baby, and you know, Joan's feeling horribly guilty about the fact that it's not her husband's and all that other stuff. And does she really want this child? I mean, because she seemed to be so easily to just pass it off to everybody else and kind of forget about it while she was going through her little selfish concern about her job and you know, not being part of the office and all that stuff. Oh, thank you for my child. You know, it seemed like it was just, and I'm wondering if that, and I don't know because I don't know Joan real well, but I'm just curious. Was that, did you notice that? Did you sense the same thing? Is she the kind of woman that.
I think if she did want the child, that magic has gone away.
Right. Because she seemed way more concerned about her job than her kid.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I mean, she's, again, that's why Joan is Joan, is because she's done always a fantastic job. And the irony is, unlike Peggy, I don't think she's ever. You know,
advanced.
I know she has an advanced. Really, I mean, she's gotten more responsibility and things like that. But I certainly wouldn't call it an advancement. But I don't. The good news is I don't think she begrudges anyone, because you were asking me, you know, whether or not Peggy and Joan had a weird history, and I said no. They actually really like each other.
Right.
Joan's always been there to help Peggy and never begrudged Peggy for rising the ladder versus, as we'll talk about later, Megan.
Right.
Who I think that there's, you know, something with that, with her. But I think at the end of the day, she's just a worker and wants to work. And so by having this kid.
Right.
Yeesh.
Well, yeah. And then, maybe she's just realizing it's such hard work. It's much easier to go to the office. And then, of course, your mom's there. And they just did not get, I thought that was great. Have you ever seen her mother?
I don't believe
okay,
so.
Okay, because I was like,
I mean,
wow.
The mom's a shipbird.
Oh, my ship God. Joan was so bitter and angry about it. And I get it, you know, part of it's true because, you know, she hasn't slept, so she's on edge and all that other stuff. But her mom seemed like a piece of work.
I mean, especially with the plumber.
Yeah.
Which he couldn't even pronounce the word plumbing, right?
I don't know exactly what he said.
You need the plum, I plum.
Yeah. But I like that, you know, Joan got all up in her grill about it, and she says, he brought the cookie. So that's okay.
Well, and I also, you know, the mother went back at her and said, yeah. You know, I know you haven't had a shortage of guys.
Uh-huh.
But then she called her fat.
Oh, yeah.
Not outright, but she said.
Yeah.
That was rough.
But, you know, also Joan said, are you out to buy his formula or yours?
Yeah.
So we know what that formula is. So.
Yeah. And it was really that kitchen or living room, dining room,
yeah.
apartment scene, basically.
Yeah.
Scene in which she really decides, you know what, I'm going back.
Right.
And obviously the mother showing her the Y&R ad.
Yeah, exactly. That was the big impetus for her to get back.
Yeah. So. And that was the first time we saw the ad.
Yeah.
You know.
We had heard about it, of course. They had presented
the idea.
Keep
talking.
I'm
going to bring it up on my phone.
Okay, great.
So they talked
about doing it. And then we finally got to see what it is. And they really did. I was surprised that they put in that we don't have any windows. So proving that Madison Avenue is not all wet, which I thought was nice.
There you go.
Nice.
So you read it. So yeah. What am I saying?
Well, I wasn't sure if you were going to find it, so I figured I'd just call it up. So.
Fair enough. Let's see.
Did you think here's the thing. Since we're still talking about Joan, she comes into the office, got the kid in the carriage, and the receptionist isn't even aware enough to go open the door for her. So she has to do all that herself, you know, open up the door to get the carriage to the front door of the ad agency. You don't remember that?
Yeah, I remember that, but I didn't, you know, unlike you, I didn't look too much into that.
Yeah, I just thought it was hysterical. So she's not even being welcomed back there. I mean, the receptionist just sitting there looking at her doesn't even go up to help her. So
what I definitely got out of that scene was that she's not welcomed back. But now that you say it, it just also goes to show, as you said, incompetent at her job.
Yeah. So. And, you know, and it seems like, you know, if Joan were running the joint, that person probably wouldn't got hired.
I would agree because they all went through Joan.
Yeah, that's my point. It's like, I'm gone and this is the first person I see. This is your face and this is the face you pick.
Yeah.
Not even helping a woman with a child in a carriage. And no, you can't even get out of your desk to help someone. No. So I was like, well, that's not a very good sign the first thing out of the gate.
So. Certainly not. Well, let's transition to talk about Roger.
Love these guys. I love how Roger and Peter don't like each other.
Well, before we talk about Pete, I do want to, you know, because we're still, you know, Joan ties in very nicely to Roger.
Right.
And the first time he sees her, let me see my baby.
Let me see my baby.
That crying snot rid thing out of here.
Way.
Which we know, of course, it's Roger's baby.
Yeah. Do you think she'll tell him?
Who?
Does
he knows.
He does?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he knows.
Wow.
It was in the recap thing that, you know, they showed, like, it's definitely yours.
Okay.
So we were reminded of that before the episode happened.
Okay, well, I didn't see that part.
But yeah, so he
just doesn't even care. Wow.
And, you know, in terms of Roger, I thought the central kind of notion of tonight's episode was that, you know, I forget what it's 100%, what was the first part of the quote, but basically the second part is, if you can't get something yourself, what's worse is that you're jealous of the person who did get it.
Uh-huh.
And and he's always, well, right now he's jealous of, it seems, Pete, and now Don as well.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Jealous of Don, clearly. And, you know, and they made it obvious why. I mean, that was just... brutal.
But why Pete? Let's talk about Pete a little bit.
Pete's got all these new accounts. He's got the energy like Roger used to have.
Roger's always been good. But as you noted, you didn't even have to ask me. Does Roger work? Not really.
Exactly, but that's my point. He doesn't have the energy or the drive to do what Pete's doing. Mm-hmm. But his way of doing it is cutting as every corner as he could and just trying to scalp clients.
Which I liked. I liked how Pete knew that's what was happening.
Yeah.
And obviously, did it upset Clara too much? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Didn't seem like she was too upset, but. But then, Sterling, he does know everything that seems to be going on.
Yeah, he's
one of the things that I wanted to bring up was, we were talking about the pillar when he was making Crane switch offices.
Right.
And that's where, obviously, Pete bumped his head and got the bloody nose. And so I wanted to know from you, did Sterling know that? That's what happened, and that's why he kind of...
Well, things. I would think that... That because there's such a good gossip trail going in that office, I would assume that Roger would find out.
Especially because Clara.
Yeah. And of course, the other guy, I forgot who was in the office when the tall
Crane.
Guy. Crane. Yeah, he saw it. No. The other guy, the taller guy. I forgot his name.
I'm sorry. Let's see. It's been a while, huh? Well, anyways, we know who we're talking about. I'll jump in.
Aaron Staten, Ken Cosgrove. So he was in there when it happened, or just slightly after, because he was there when Pete was drying off the blood. So I'm sure because he tells everybody, he probably wants to tell the other guys. So, and I'm sure it got back to Roger, because how could you not tell that?
I've always been upset with the idea that Ken gets so much.
Right.
Back in the day, they were both made like, they were... it was always thought to be of, like, the head of account, the head of accounts, right?
Right, yeah.
And Pete got the job, but then Ken got the job as well, meaning there were two heads of accounts and they were going to split the accounts.
Yeah.
And so Ken's always had this advancement or whatever thought to be good, and I just haven't seen it. I don't know. Maybe he is good, but I think he's much more like Roger. We're like, hey, what's up?
Yeah, he doesn't seem like
chit-chat.
Yeah, exactly. But I was saying, now either Roger learned about it from Ken or whatever grapevine they got in the office, or the whole reason why Pete called him into his office for that meeting to talk about how he can't have clients in here because of this horrible office he's in. But when they first come in there, they're trapped behind the pillar. You can't even see Pete. So Pete was obviously making his point. So it's either that's why he talked about the pillar, or it's because Roger found out about it through Ken.
Well, I think it's more so about the fact that Pete brought up the meeting, but it's also great writing.
Yeah.
The connection
the
was
whole
there.
Thing,
made.
Yeah. he bumps into it.
I love how, obviously Megan Crane, and speaking about Crane, again, he feels like he's so important. And most places, he's the head of the TV department.
I know.
And yet he gets no one gives him any respect.
No.
And to be honest, he actually does have clients, and I've never seen the books.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about, because I don't know enough about that history, because it didn't seem like the money revenue was that big of a deal back then, because otherwise, like these days, it would be a different beast.
Well, I guess in many ways it'd be the equivalent of like starting a podcast, right?
Yeah.
It's a new venture.
Yeah, nice tie-in.
But
yeah, that's what I'm saying. I just don't think the money was as huge as it was, because I don't think they really understood at that time just yet. Not to the degree that they do now. Let's put it that way. So
certainly, but also I do like how Roger did actually handle it. Again, this is what compliment to Roger and how he is so smart.
Yeah.
Why are you taking meetings in your office? You should be courtside.
Right. Exactly.
Which is actually, if you really think about it,
that's
a smart choice.
Yeah, because you're not going to be doing on a golf course, not in New York. So that's why you would do it.
Yeah. And then
I love that scene though, when they're in Pete's office and Pete's trying to lobby for a bigger office, all that kind of stuff, and Roger just says, basically, shut up and leaves. You're a junior partner. Get used to it. So I just thought that was great. I liked Roger.
I really love Roger too. He's so funny.
He is. He's hysterical. He's horrible to his wife, but he's funnier on the guys. And he's, the whole line about the when he comes in from the office and everybody's waiting outside to apply for a job. That kind of frankness is refreshing, although sometimes it's horribly inappropriate, but it is funny.
Well, also, yeah, speaking about his wife, you know, I said the central kind of idea to Roger in this episode was the notion that he's, you know, he's jealous of the man that doesn't have it.
Wow.
And then as soon as he said that, his wife at the party turns to him like, you mother effer.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you, well, I'm not good enough.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And I was like, man, I can't believe he said that in front of everybody, and his wife's just standing right there. It's a terrible thing to say.
Very terrible. But it also seems to be a theme for the women that they don't think they're good enough for their guys.
Yeah, and I guess they put up with it. And then, you know, the whole idea that, you know, when he got up in the morning because he's going to go chase after Pete's, you know, red herring, whatever, Staten Island in the Coca-Cola meeting, he has to get up early, and she goes, where are you going? Yeah, shut up. He just says, shut up. I go, oh, my God. I don't know anybody that talks to their spouse like that.
The good old days.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure there are plenty of people who do, but I just go, why? Why would you marry somebody that you have such a little respect for?
Why
does she put up with it? I mean, I understand. I know it's a totally different time, but even in that time, I'm going, why did anybody do that?
Well, I guess it goes to show that he doesn't actually respect her.
He doesn't respect himself either.
So. No, he wants Don's life or Pete's. He wants Pete's business, but
Don's
life.
Wife is what he wants.
Life or wife?
I think he wants Don's wife. I don't think you know that idea.
Fair enough.
I mean, he was crazy when she was doing. Okay, all right, but we're getting nervous. But you know, the whole party scene and her doing that song and that number. Roger, you know, he says, "Why don't you sing like that? Why don't you look like that?" that's great.
Absolutely. Let's see. Let's transition to Pete's kind of life. You know, speaking of the train station, which not the I'm sorry, not the train station, the train, car,
right?
And the scene in which you were in.
Yes.
You know, that's when Pete's talking with his fellow man.
Yeah.
And they're coming from Connecticut, which for those of you who don't know, I grew up in Connecticut, and so I know the whole thing being, you know, you live in Connecticut, and that's why Connecticut has a lot of, you know, it's considered the richest state in the country. It's because it has a lot of Madison Ave people commuting from places like Greenwich, which, you know, if you heard on the PA, they were passing through.
Right.
Next stop, Greenwich. Yeah. But basically him telling him, like, hey, if you had a car, you know, you could come home later and later.
Yeah, exactly.
And Pete's saying, well, you know what, that's not what I...
Yeah.
No, I'm not necessarily saying that.
No.
But, and I thought we would... Because the episode was kind of progressing that way, where it was all about kids.
Yeah.
We saw Don's kids. We saw, you know, Joan with a kid.
Right.
And just kind of, I'm sure the other people. You know, I thought that we would see a lot more of Pete's home life.
Right.
But we didn't.
No. Is that unusual?
No, no.
Okay.
It's, you know, we really don't see, Don was the only one who we really saw home life to. But, you know, again, they set it up where I thought it was going to be like that. And, remind me to say something about the invitation to everybody.
Okay.
From Megan.
Right.
Because it messed up everyone.
They
All right, fine.
Let me go ahead.
If I may kind of segue back to Joan.
All right.
The conversation in the kitchen, you know, about Megan sending the invitation.
Right.
The mother was like, "You see, you got yours late."
Yeah.
And no, everyone got theirs late.
Everybody has repercussions or thoughts about that. And, you know, it's like, oh, come on.
And Pete did too, you know, because his wife, you know, they were chatting in their kitchen / entranceway, and she goes, did she really give you the invitation today?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it was just mine, but mine definitely just got...
I was so worried about it. I'm like, my God, why are your lives that silly that you're worried about when you got an invitation?
Yeah. And also, they didn't make it explicit. They never do with these things, you know, in terms of expos, but... In terms of the house that they live in, I don't think he hasn't put much money in for it. I think
talking about Pete?
Yes, I think it was her dad.
Her dad, okay.
Yeah. So, and that's why, because, you know, he's upset about his business.
Right.
And she says, as you walk in through this door, you know.
This is your home.
This is your home. Well, I'm not talking about that. And I think that's a...
Oh, I see. Okay, I didn't get that reference, but that makes sense.
So, yeah, I think... That's what that was referring to. And then, let's see, what else happened with Pete?
Well, I just like that he bested Roger with that whole, chase. You know, tell him, go ahead. You know, he's so mad at his secretary for letting Roger check out his,
his
calendar and then meet up with his clients and do all this stuff. And he's, you know, Roger's doing the very least he can do to get his own clients or weasel something away from Pete. And then Pete sends him on the wild goose chase. I love that.
I love that too. And I find it hysterical that Roger did what he did for The Office.
Which part?
Where he switched Crane and...
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah, it was surprising that he did that. I didn't get... I mean, I didn't see his turn on that. I was wondering if they... I guess he just came to his senses. I mean, what made him turn? I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I think... Because in terms of as we're speaking about Roger...
Yeah.
Pete's doing... There was a line earlier that I think Ken said to Pete, you know, you got to worry about Roger stealing your clients. And, you know, he said, I shouldn't be worried about my own people stealing clients. I should be worried about other agencies like Y&R. And so Pete's doing what's best for the company.
Right.
Whereas Roger's not doing that.
Right. But are they trying to show that he is? Is this one, you know, like, yeah, at the end of the day, he'll finally do something for the – because he did do something for the company because it was better for the company to have Pete in the bigger office if he's going to show the clients.
I think so. I think that's what it came down to.
Okay, because I thought that's what they were going for, because clearly he didn't want to. He does have very little respect for Pete, but he finally does acquiesce and gives him the office.
Yeah, and then Pete, of course, finds out.
Yeah, but that scene was great with Crane. Crane's so worried that he's going to get in trouble for what he said about Megan that he gets hauled into Sterling's office and he's nervous about it.
Yeah, that was a nice running joke of people not knowing what people said.
Yeah,
and
certainly
that was, with the Crane thing, it was the biggest one.
Yeah, my favorite is I'll do it, but you're gonna owe me. No, this is a transaction. I just gave you $1,000.
That's right. And it was funny too. He's like, wait, is that every month? Get out of here!
Exactly.
What do you think?
I love that. That's great.
So seems like a good time to transition into Peggy.
Right on, Peggy.
What are your thoughts on her?
Well, you know, I came into this new, and, you know, she seems very earnest with her efforts trying to, you know, make a difference and, you know, carve out a niche for herself in the ad world and stuff like that. And, you know, she seems like she's the kind of person that has had to work twice as hard just because she's a woman, all that kind of stuff. But she doesn't seem to be too... too upset about what comes down the line, although I don't know if this is true, but you know, she was so upset about Dawn not standing up for her idea in the kidney bean thing that I'm just wondering, does that always happen to her or just now?
Well, it always happens to her in the sense that, you know, she expects to get a reaction out of Dawn,
right,
and it doesn't always go that way.
Right. She wanted him to back her play and he didn't do it.
Yeah, but she does bring up a good point of the fact that Dawn has actually changed, and obviously she's referring that it's because of Megan,
right?
Because he's now kind and patient,
right?
Whereas before he would have said, "F you, if you're not going to be our clients, we don't need you,"
right?
But it's also a sign that he's with Megan and that perhaps times are tough.
Yeah, because I was wondering, because he said the whole thing about, look, he wasn't going to buy into it anyway. Why am I going to waste an hour and a half on trying to shove it down his throat? Which that was the part that I was going, okay, this doesn't sound like the Don Draper that I've heard people talk about. And again, since I haven't seen the show, I have to go on what they showed me today. So I'm just wondering, this is what you're talking about. Normally he would have just said, well, screw you. This is the one we're doing. Is that what you're saying?
He would have either said, F you, get out of my office. Then in the past, sometimes he'd have to apologize. But hey, that would be his initial reaction.
Right.
Or
he would have backed the play and said, no, this is what you want. This is good.
Yeah, he would have convinced them otherwise.
Right,
and that's why he is who he is in terms of the ad world, is because he has that ability to say, again, my favorite ultimate moment was the season one finale when he's talking about the picture slide.
The carousel?
The carousel, you know, and he brought it to life, you know, life's like a carousel and all that. Yeah. And that was such a moving scene. No one expected him to pull it out of his ass, to be honest.
Which is very difficult with a carousel.
Damn right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was just, you know, it's interesting to see his evolution. I mean, I've only heard of it, but it seems like they are taking him, they're taking him down this road here.
Well, I mean, in terms of her, too, you know, she's always, as you said, she's she's been the one who's patient. She's been the one who's kind. And, you know, we have a saying, John and I do amongst our circle, of, you know, there's in this world there's sadists and masochists. And she is definitely a masochist.
She's a masochist. Okay.
You know?
And Don was a sadist.
Yes.
Okay.
And he still is.
Yeah.
To an extent.
But a softer, kinder one.
Yes, and, you know, she's always taken it from him, and she's advanced because of it. But now, I guess she's seeing... She's always wanted more.
Yeah.
And she was really disappointed at the end of season 4 when she didn't quite get what she wanted.
Uh-huh.
And, but the good news is I don't think she's that bitter about it now.
She didn't seem to be, but and I thought, you know, she's not bitter, but she harbors resentment. Obviously, it came out at the party when she was drunk and she said the wrong thing, had to apologize for it, so.
But, again, I mean, she's always getting into those situations.
Yeah.
Because, again, she said sorry too many times, and I don't think she was too wrong. Or in the past,
well,
she's never...
It wasn't wrong. It was just, it was like, you're whining at a party. You know, it's like, what? Why? What does that get you anyway?
Well, I guess the way in which she said it was wrong.
Yeah.
But basically, you know, out of all those people, she again, she works literally all week,
uh-huh.
many of the weekends, and practically stays there all night.
Uh-huh.
So and gets really no credit for the end, in the end. You know, she does rise a little bit.
Right.
But not as much as she would hope for. And then there's, but the flip side to her is that, you know, she feels that she's entitled to a lot.
Right.
When in fact she isn't. So,
I agree with all that, but when does it ever benefit you to whine to your boss at his birthday party? When does that ever get you anywhere? I mean, and obviously she knew she was wrong. She should drink. But it was just one of those classic moments. I mean, I think a lot of people can relate to that because a lot of people have done it. But, you know, because she seems to usually keep a better head on her.
She does, but, again, she's kind of green.
Yeah.
You know, which in the meeting with Hines,
right.
She also did display that.
Okay, speaking of that meeting, now, come on. I wanted to see that commercial. I wanted to see those kidney beans doing this some weird ballet. I wanted to see that damn thing, man. I was hoping for sure I'd get to see that.
That would have been fun.
That would have been interesting. It's like, what? She's going to slow-mo the kidney beans? What? This would have been nice.
But, again, unlike Dawn, you know, she puts it out there that she's this great ad person.
Right.
And yet, you know, when she was told her idea sucked.
Yeah.
Again, if you really wanted to be like Dawn, you would...
You would have come back with something.
Yeah. And, I mean, if nothing else, you don't have to... The bad side of Dawn was F you, but the good side of Dawn was, no, this is what you want.
Exactly.
Here's why.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking was missing. The other thing was, you know, in terms of pitches, it was kind of a horrible pitch. It was almost... I felt like... And tell me if I'm anywhere way off base on this. It seemed like she didn't really know her audience when she was pitching it, because I'm going, is she really trying to get this guy to buy into this? Because it didn't seem like from the get-go that he would even buy this idea. It seemed like she needed a better way in. Not that the idea itself was bad, because I think that, okay, that'd be fine, I guess. You know, I've seen weirder things in advertising. But just the way she pitched it to this particular guy, it's like, I don't think he was ever going to buy that.
I don't think, well, it could be the guy. But I also think her delivery of it, you know, for those of you who like business, was terrible.
Yeah.
She seemed timid.
Right.
She was stuttered. And she was unconvincing.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah.
You get in that room, you got to show them the energy. And I know, again, this is...
Is that how she, you know, is she normally portrayed that way? Or does she...
She's still on
that learning curve.
She is. But she's had success the times that she's done that.
Okay.
You know, portrayed that confidence.
Right.
It's been much more like a Dawn, whereas this one, she went back to old Peggy.
Got
it.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting.
But also... You know, to kind of to move forward in terms of Peggy, she's very – I think – does she come off as jealous of Megan?
No, I didn't – I didn't feel that. No, I just – no, actually, I didn't feel that at all.
Because, I mean, again, where we left off season 4, you know, she was hoping for a lot of things.
And yeah.
Then, you know, it didn't come with Dawn.
Right.
And, you know, there's obviously some tension and resentment and things like that. Towards Dawn, but I would think there would be more with Megan.
Well, there was some you know, I just thought it was residual strife from the party. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought it was. I didn't read it as jealousy.
Okay. Well, obviously, and you actually brought up a good question that I'm trying to still figure out is the idea of when Megan said, you know, I feel sick, I have to go.
Right.
If she that was her plan all along, knowing that Peggy, of all people, would go to Don and say, hey, you know what, you gotta.
Right.
Or like, she's upset.
Yeah, because that's the thought. I don't know Megan at all. And so I was, as it was all happening, and when Don is speaking to, I should say when Peggy's apologizing to Don, and she explains that Megan went home because she wasn't feeling well and she wanted to be alone, and he goes, you don't know her at all. So it almost looked like that not only was Don upset with that, but he was seriously saying, you don't know her. And he kind of knew what was going on. But I don't know, because I don't know if Megan is that kind of not conniving, but far thinking, so to speak. Because she said this thing to Peggy, and then if we're to believe that she set the whole thing up when Don got home, she knew that Peggy was going to say something to Don, and Don was going to click on Don, and Don was going to go, oh, that means she's at home. Okay, I'm going to go there.
Yeah, I mean,
because she seemed to be start running that. As soon as he came in the door, she's already running the number.
Yeah.
She's already, pretending to be upset and, in the robe. And, she's ready to take the robe off and the whole thing. At least that's what it looked like to me.
I agree. To take a step back, I think in terms of I thought it in that moment when she was upset that she was, in fact, upset. Simply because, as we talked at length about Peggy, the reason why we talked about it is because it's a direct comparison to Megan. I don't think Megan has the legs that Peggy does. Peggy, she's taken so much crap, but has always risen one way or the other. Whereas, as Megan is pointing out, these people are all so cynical.
Yeah.
And again, this is what you signed up for.
Yeah.
And as later on, as she says, how could you not like a surprise party, meaning Don?
Yeah.
And obviously the head of all of the cynicalism here at the office is Don.
Exactly.
And you're with Don.
Right, but she doesn't know him. She doesn't know who he really is.
How does she know him? More as like the family man? That's why we were shown the scenes at the beginning with him and going to the Statue of Liberty and all that.
Well, it was interesting because when they were alone after coming home and her, taking off her robe and all that other stuff and having sex – she was complaining how they don't like her, or maybe it is I don't like them and all this stuff. And he's saying, "Who cares? I like you. I want you there." And that seemed to be genuine. I think it's kind of like it's now the what she's seeing is the way he wants to be. That he just I'm not exactly sure because I don't know where they're taking him in his arc. But they're obviously it's mutating.
Yeah. Well, here's she's jealous of. Yeah, she certainly got jealous of Joan, as we talked about.
Sure.
But here's what I don't get. First off, he wanted you to flash him in the office. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Women.
And then you did.
First off, there you go. That's a sure tell sign that, this guy wants to bone me. And likes me. There you go. I'm going to be blunt about that. second, again... Shit, what was my second point? It was the fact that he hates people.
Yeah.
When you were going over the list of people who should be there, you eliminated the clients because he hates he doesn't want to talk to clients. And, you're crossing off people that he absolutely hates and doesn't want there.
But it's a classic thing. She thinks, oh, he probably doesn't really hate people. Or, I just need to help him. And then, he wants to change him a little bit.
What? There's just some guys, and I venture to put myself in this camp. I just hate that crap.
What, women trying to change men, or
no surprise parties. Like, okay. Especially like I hate people.
Right? Yeah, I know. And and a lot of people don't believe that. They think, it's all a lot of bluster. And no, there are plenty of people that I know of that would absolutely not want to. It's not even the surprise party. I spend my time at the office. I spend a lot of time with these people. It's not that I hate them, but I just don't. This is my time outside of the office. I don't want to share it. Yeah. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think that's what he's done with them.
I think so, too. And there was another point I was going to bring up.
But I think she was just pissed off more than anything because he wasn't seeing how much she wanted him to enjoy himself, and he didn't see the reason, the intent behind the party itself, because Don was just pissed off at the party itself, you know, because and the embarrassment, as he put it, he was, what did he, no, did he say, call embarrassment, or?
I forget the
whatever word he used. Yeah, you embarrassed me in front of everybody. It's like, what the hell was he embarrassed about?
The Zooby Zoo.
You think so? But when she was doing the Zooby Doo, he seemed to be having a ball. I think he liked it.
Yeah, well, in the moment, he probably did, and then he realized, started thinking
about it. But here's the other thing that I was wondering is, he doesn't seem the kind of guy that gives a crap of what anybody else thinks.
Again, when it's on his terms.
Okay, so because she brought this in and he had to deal with it in front of everybody, that's what he was pissed off at?
Yeah.
I just didn't understand. There seemed to be some dissonance with the fact that as she's doing it, he seems to be absolutely fine with it. He likes it. He enjoys it. I don't think he cares about anybody else. And then all of a sudden, at the end of the party, he's embarrassed by it. I was like, what the hell? I didn't get that at all.
Well,
didn't make any sense.
I think, if anything, he's just good at putting on acts.
Oh, is that? Well, clearly. You know? Clearly. Yeah.
So.
But, you know, yeah, I thought that he saw Roger in the hallway before they went in there. I was like, oh, bummer. Yeah, he's not going to enjoy this surprise.
I mean, Roger, what a, just giving the surprise away.
Classic.
So bad. But I don't, again, he wouldn't, but I, honest to God, I actually think that actually set him up nicely to half enjoy the party.
Yeah.
Because if he came in and was fully surprised.
Yeah, then he at least had that 10 seconds to prepare himself and went, oh, crap, all right.
So I certainly think that. That about wraps it up. I mean, I'm sure there's tons of stuff that we...
Well, yeah, it was a two-hour thing. Yeah, there was plenty of stuff, but we got to get out of here.
That's right. Well, in case we missed something...
I'm sure we'll hear about it.
Well, yeah, let us know. And again, yeah, we try to cover everything. Yeah. We don't always get to. But let us know. Email us at info@afterbuzztv.com. Follow us on Twitter. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to go to a quick commercial, and then we've got some great news and gossip for you guys, and then we're going to give our predictions for the next week based off of what we saw, which is basically nothing. So we're going to be pulling that out of our asses.
Oh, nice.
So here we go. We'll be back after this.
After Buzz TV.
Hi. I was once like you, a lazy, angry loner whose only joy was watching TV and surfing the net. And like you, after I'd see one of my favorite TV shows, I'd be so excited and have so many questions that I'd actually have to talk to my douchebag coworkers about it at the water cooler. Then I discovered AfterBuzzTV.com. AfterBuzzTV produces after-show webcasts and podcasts for TV series of all kinds, like post-game wrap-up shows for all your favorite TV shows. AfterBuzzTV hosts are industry insiders who break down episodes of shows, take calls from fans, and interview cast and crew from each series, with over 60 different after-shows, from Boardwalk Empire to American Idol to Vampire Diaries to Real Housewives and more. Now, after a night of TV, I can ignore my stupid coworkers, who I hate, and go straight to my desk and watch or listen to all my favorite AfterBuzz TV aftershows and have all the TV fan interaction I need. Thank you, AfterBuzz TV.
AfterBuzz TV. What do you want to buzz about? AfterBuzz TV News.
Welcome back, guys. Here we go. So, news and gossip.
What do you got, Phil? All
right. Well, first off, they did a huge, huge cover story on TV Guide for Mad Men.
Yeah.
Obviously, Mad Men is the talk of the town.
Yeah, because they're finally back. They've been doing PR everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's and there's been a lot of talk about their season 5 image poster or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you know the one?
Oh, the one falling?
No. That's the iconic one. But what I'm talking about is basically the ones. It's the mannequin one.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You've seen this one, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
What do you think of the poster?
Well, I thought it was. It's the series. I thought it was a great
interpretation.
Yeah, because it's what they're the guys treat women as objects. They're faceless. They're just bodies. I mean, it made sense. I get it.
But the guys were mannequins too. They just happen to have suits on, right?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't notice that. I just assumed the guys were there.
Yeah, I mean,
because I didn't see the guys. I thought they were looking at the female mannequin.
Yes, they were, but it's the I'm going to pull it up right now.
Yeah, please do, because I only saw it in passing.
Madman really... Season 5 poster. Here we go. We're looking it up as we speak, thanks to Bing.com. Okay, wait. Well, here's the weird part, at least from my interpretation. There's a mannequin female.
Right.
She's nude. The mannequin man is sitting down, basically there for his pleasure. And then in the mirror reflection image, you have Dawn. So I guess, yeah, I mean, maybe I saw an earlier one where the person looking in was like a mannequin. I don't know. It's kind of anime. The colors are so rich and vibrant that it made me believe that Dawn was also a mannequin.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh. So, I mean...
Got it.
But
what's the big scuttlebutt?
The scuttlebutt is, obviously the portrayal. First off, you have a naked mannequin.
Right. But it's a mannequin, for crying out loud. It's not even... It's not really anatomically correct.
Little boys interpret.
But it's not anatomically correct.
Nah, fair enough. But, so basically some people are...
They're upset because it doesn't have a fig leaf on it or something?
I think that the people that aren't fans of the show,
right?
You know, they think of the show as sexist and racist and things like that. But no, it's just portraying a time, and that's the argument.
That was sexist and racist. So I mean, what do you want to play the '60s and not be sexist and racist?
Yeah.
What is that? That doesn't exist. That's a world of fake believe.
Was the Care Bears during like the '60s? What's like a '60s animation hippie type thing?
Oh God, I don't know animation hippie.
Fair
type.
Enough. Well,
but so, how do you? I mean, how would it? Why would how? How could you accurately portray that? There was sexism. There was racism. I mean, that's what it was.
I don't know. Well, anyway, moving
on. Not entirely, but
in a preview clip for Sunday's April 1st Mad Men episode, Elizabeth Moss, who plays Peggy. She says, "I'm the one you need to impress right now."
Right.
She could be talking about Megan with her zoo.
Yeah.
and then it goes on to write, "We have a feeling, though, that the new husband, Don, is already impressed since Megan is again strutting around topless." Okay.
What? I didn't see that in the upcoming.
I don't know.
Wow. Okay.
And then Ham, by the way, directed the episode titled Tea Leaves.
Yeah.
Is that the next one? That is the next one.
I believe it is, yeah. He talked about that on one of the interviews I saw.
Very cool. You see a lot of these people getting into directing.
Yeah. And Roger Sterling. Sorry, not Roger Sterling, but
John Slattery.
Yeah, he's directed a few already.
Which I think, you know, it's kind of like the Clint Eastwood effect. Like, if you know acting, you know how to really capture what you want.
Yeah, usually. And this isn't always the case, but usually an actor really knows how to direct other actors. You know when to say it, what to say, when to say it, and when to back off, when to give them their process. Or I shouldn't say when to give them the process, but when to give them space to go through their process. And that's very helpful. And one of the things that John Hamm was saying is it – you know, he thought he really understood the show until he had to direct it, because there's so much more involved when you have to direct it that it gave him a whole new respect for every department and every department.
Well, certainly
head and
because,
all the people behind it.
But even from the perspective as an actor, he's fully worried about Don Draper and all the things that Don would do,
which is all he should be worried about.
Yeah,
as an actor.
And the worry is also, you know, if you're the actor directing the episode, are you going to make it, like, all about you?
Right.
And I think him and John have the wherewithal to know, okay, you know what? Mad Men isn't – like,
it's
obviously
not...
Don's pivotal to all of Mad Men, but it's not just about me.
It is. Yeah, and he can. So.
Let's see what else we got here.
The whole idea of a director, you got to serve the story more than the character.
That's right. Well, speaking of another story, Mad Men star January Jones credits her ability to get back to work just 6 weeks after giving birth to son Xander Dane to a healthy diet and vitamins and tea with placentella and something. It's spelled place N-T-A. How do you pronounce that?
I'm sure it has something to do with placenta. Placentella? I don't know.
Oh, okay. this is where I show off that I am indeed actually young and slightly stupid at times.
No, well, it's not an obvious thing, I don't think. Maybe if you're looking at it, but it seems like, why would you name it that? But okay.
Whatever. Fair enough. So again, I'm also running the boards and things.
Yeah,
like
it's hard
that,
to
so
do. Yeah, exactly.
I'm doing five things at once. But I am a little bit stupid.
So they're going to, you know, we didn't see her at all. I don't know where they left last season, but I was curious why she wasn't in this at all.
Well,
is that unusual?
It's not. I mean, now that him and
they've
separated,
split up, divorced, and the whole thing.
I don't mind that. Again, I think the fans, to be quite honest with you, don't like it when we go back to Janet Jones for no reason. Like,
right,
who cares about her storyline?
Well, that's what I was curious about. I don't know enough about it, but I just thought it was odd. But it didn't. I didn't mind it. I certainly the premiere episode, you know, stands on its own. You don't need her for any reason. I was just curious as to was it common for her not to be in the latest episodes?
It was.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then so John Hand goes in the closet.
Whoa.
That's the title of this story.
Whoa.
The comedy interview web series 7 Minutes in Heaven has found a new home on Yahoo Screen, and helping break in its new digs is none other than John Hamm.
Nice.
Hamm, fresh off his season premiere of Mad Men, went into the closet with comedian and SNL writer Mike O'Brien to answer O'Brien's candid questions like what his home address is. We're also treated to an exclusive rendition of how Don Draper plans to discontinue his cheating ways. Then O'Brien is the envy of every man, and let's face it, most men in America, as he becomes the object of John Hamm's passion.
Whoa.
His quick wit is on full display in the interview, which is a thing the universe needs more of. Blah, blah,
yeah.
Blah. So, there you go. What do you think of that story?
Well, it was good. I would love to know what they talked about, because, you know, lately, because of his comments about reality TV, he's done a lot of interviews.
Go to AOLTV.com. You know, right. you'll see it there. Let's see. And then, you know, there's... Okay, this I have to... By the way, a lot of these are, like, from 4 hours ago.
I know. Brand new. I mean, this is
you know, so...
Pretty good.
We're not going to go through all of them. This will be my last one that
okay.
I'll do. So, Zoo, Bizu, Hubi.
this song. You need to add a little melody to that. Come on,
I
Phil.
I should. But it's amazing we're 48... Let's see. TV.com writes, it's amazing what 48 hours can do for an obscure French pop
song.
Yeah,
no kidding.
But then not all obscure French pop songs are chosen to become the musical centerpiece of the first episode of Mad Men in nearly 2 years. From the moment Megan grabbed the microphone and performed the sensuous Zuzu Bizu, the hit by Jillian Hills, blah blah. It talks. Hold on, let me pull up the full article because it mentions John Hamm. I'm sorry, not John Hamm. Matthew Weiner, the creator.
Right.
And
why did he pick that one? Where did he come
he
up
picked
with that?
Because the lyrics translate to "Oh, kiss, kiss, my God, they are sweet." That means I confess, but yes, I love only you. So it was selected over bigger hits from artists such as Nancy Sinatra and Dusty Springfield.
Nice.
He says, Matthew Weiner does, behind the choosing of the song, let's see. He was driving in his car. I talked to various artists who I admire. We actually had a temp piece of music when I had originally submitted the pilot to the network.
Oh.
Wait, no, I'm sorry. He's talking about the, okay, now they're asking him about the, I'm sorry, the A Beautiful Mime, which is the theme song. But in talking about Zuzu Bizu, he said, how did you decide on that? I choose almost every piece of music on the series. I'm open to suggestions, but usually not interested.
Right.
That's candid. I have a very personal relationship with music and am a delusional person to the degree that before the show existed, I kept the file in my iTunes of all the songs that that could go one day in the show.
Wow. That's somebody that, yeah, he's really affected by music. See, I'd be the other guy saying, I'm not... What did he say? Well, I'd be the opposite. I'm open to everything, and I welcome suggestions because I wouldn't even know where to start.
Yes, yes. And then, that's about it. That's all the news and gossip I have for this week.
Good deal.
Again, there's so much more stuff out there.
Well,
but I'm not
especially right now because it's premiering. They've been on their press tour. I mean, there's going to be news articles like crazy about them right now.
That and, during the hiatus, you know, Sky TV, that was a big thing that getting picked up in Europe and things like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, internationally, it's gaining some press and all that. So, But with that, why don't we head straight into
predictions?
That's right.
And now, you're After Buzz TV
predictions. So, John, we literally got nothing in this preview.
No,
I mean, we got images and words.
Yeah,
that,
it's like what the hell?
Meaning.
Exactly. Well, so apparently there's going to be a man coming into the show, and Megan wants to impress him more than, or is she saying impress him more than Don? Something, but I can't remember the exact phrase she used. Make him happy or something like that. Yeah, so there's that. I don't know what that is or who that is, but that was interesting. Well, and I don't know if that, like you were saying, does that have anything to do with Peggy saying you need to impress me right now more than anybody?
Yeah, and we talked about January Jones' character. She's going to be back with her husband. You know, and obviously we got a little bit in terms of because of Sally and the kids being
right
here. You know, so I think we're going to see a lot more of them since we didn't in this episode. you talk.
Oh, sorry.
I need a water.
Okay, you get some. All right, well, you know, what I was curious about is, you know, it seems like this whole thing with Roger and Pete, what I'm curious about is how much, you know, because Pete always seems to really – not always seems to care, but he loves the advancement. He wants the office, and I'm wondering when he's going to go after Rogers. I mean, he kind of did already in a sense, but I don't know how they're going to keep playing that out, but it seems like that's going to keep happening. I would love to see those guys. I love it when those guys are at each other.
Yeah, and we didn't mention this in the episode, but Pete's wife says to him, dissatisfaction is a sign of ambition.
Right.
Which is a good way to put – and yeah, nail down who Pete really is. He's always
right
dissatisfied,
yeah,
and that's why. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of other stuff,
I don't have a clue.
Might as well speak gibberish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which I did for a lot of this.
But regardless, we will be back here Sunday yeah nights, and we'll be recapping. Again, we'll have other people joining us, but nevertheless, I hope you guys enjoyed us. We try to cover everything. We don't always get a chance to. I mean, geez, we've gone for an hour.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're still saying that we may not have covered everything, this show is so brilliant. There's so much to cover.
Yeah, and let us know.
Let us know what we're not.
When you comment, you know, you write in, let us know what you want us to cover. Well, yeah, you got thoughts or things you want us to talk about, let us know.
That's right. And and also support Maria Menounos on Dancing with the Stars.
There you go.
It really means a lot to us.
Team enough.
Until next time, this is Phil Svitek.
And John Comerford. I thought you were going to say my name.
I was going to, but
yeah,
then I stopped.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back Sunday.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.